we're talking about the Welsh landscape is changing. So there's a reality that sort of services are going to need to be delivered in partnership or in collaboration. So how are organisations getting the necessary assurance if they do change the way the services are being delivered?
As an auditor, you won't be surprised to hear me say that I think what's needed is clarity at the outset of who is responsible for what, not just in terms of delivering the service, but everything that goes around that in terms of providing a service to the public and the citizen. So who is accountable for what? How will assurance be obtained or indeed provided to support good governance? And by good governance, again, I just mean good decision-making so that decisions are fully informed. So I think there needs to be clarity at the outset, and then you can, everything else will then fall out of that. A lot of the problems that we see as auditors is where that clarity doesn't exist at the outset. Things go wrong. Things will go wrong. That's inevitable. And then it's a case of, well, who's responsible? I don't know. And it's kind of, it's nothing to do with me. We contracted that out to you. You're supposed to be dealing with it. And there was just no clarity at the outset. And while that sort of argument or haggling is going on about what went wrong, nobody is putting things right, and the service is floundering.
Andy, as a board member, how would you seek assurances that if some of the services that your organisation delivers has been changed?
I think for me that there are two pieces here, one of which I think, you know, I completely endorse when someone was talking about being clear about outcomes. And I think for me, it builds one of the earlier points about risk management would be invisible if we were really getting it right. And this is about saying we need to start addressing the causes of risk at the root, not at the symptom. And that means that, for instance, we need to be understanding how the goods and services that are being procured by the public sector in Wales would be redesigned to be fit for living communities. Now, right now, that doesn't come across many people's radar. So to say, how do we make sure that that everything from the things that are around us, the tables, the chairs, the lighting, everything else is made of materials that are good for the planet by people who are getting a living wage? But we don't even ask those questions right now. So the big thing for us is to work back from that outcome to say, where would responsibility lie for that? Where does the role of procurement in really understanding how to take that forwards? And I think what we can start to do is to have an open discussion with the stakeholders who have the biggest impact, to work together with them to say, how do we redesign products and services so that they start to make the world that we're in better rather than more dangerous? And for me, that is about collaboration at a level that we've never had before, of putting both sets of cards on the table and understanding the end-to-end value chain, and only then ascribing risk and taking responsibility for delivering the quality that we've said we would and being accountable for doing that.
Andy, thank you. Keely, what are your thoughts?
I mean, good partnership governance arrangements, you have to have this in place from the start. So when you're first thinking of working in partnership with another organisation or collaborating with another organisation, it's too late when things have gone wrong, as Anthony was saying, to play the blame game. You've got to have in place from the start, built into your partnership agreement, thoughts about your audit and assurance arrangements. So where are you going to get assurances from? Who's going to provide them? What are the other, you know, risk management arrangements that you want to put in place within the partnership? So what processes are each partner going to have, and can you rely on those processes? I mean, I've heard more and more recently of organisations who are using shared services, for example, and particularly around academies. Lots of risks around academies, and so councils are trying to find out, okay, well, where is the money going if we're paying money on behalf of an academy, if we're doing the payroll, for example, for an academy. We want to know that actually once that money's been transferred over to the academy, well, what are the arrangements in place, what are the controls in place that money is going to be spent correctly, that we're not just paying it over to a load of ghost employees, for example, you know, basic stuff, but the council wanted to know what was going to be happening once the money had been transferred across to the academy, even though it's sort of an agency arrangement. And that's only been brought up because of issues that have arisen within these types of arrangements, and sometimes it's too late to put them in retrospectively. So I think, you know, that's one of the great things about risk management, obviously, is that you've got to think about these things in advance. I mean, a lot of it is identifying the risk and then working out, okay, what are you going to do to put these in place so that you don't end up in the type of situation where you have people trying to work out who's responsible for some mistake that's occurred. But I mean, don't forget about the audit committee. Don't forget about your board. It's clear that they have a role in all of this. So if your audit committee knows that you're about to enter into partnership, ask them what they want to know, ask them what would give them comfort, and that might help you to work out what sort of arrangements need to be put into place. I mean, the Institute of Risk Management, which is a great organisation, which I'm sure many of you will have heard of, has got a recent document. It was only published at the end of last week, which is called Extended Enterprise, Managing Risk in Complex 21st Century Organisations. And it's interesting because I hadn't heard the term extended enterprise, but their definition is basically it's a structure where a number of organisations to come together in a joint endeavour in order to achieve outcomes that none of them could have achieved on their own. Now, to you and me, to those of us who are listening, that sounds very much like shared service arrangement, a partnership arrangement, collaboration, just in slightly different terminology. You know, it's a fairly private sector heavy document, but I still think that there are pieces of information and there are lessons that can be learned from that document. And again, it's another one that we can share. So it isn't just an issue that's unique to the public sector.
Keely, thank you. So Fran, in reality, what does this mean for Conwy?
Well, we've learnt a lot over the years about how we gain the necessary assurance from our collaborations, some of which have worked and some of which those collaborations have since ceased. But I guess from a practical perspective, what we've learnt is that you need to have governance arrangements for collaborations. Of course you do, but they need to be relevant to the size of that collaboration and a level of risk that's associated around that collaboration. What we found is, I think we did a trawl of all the partnerships and collaborations we had in Conwy, and it came to a list of 160. Well, there's no way you can manage that. So what we developed was a collaboration toolkit, governance toolkit, and what we do now is assess those collaborations according to their legal status, so that we've managed to redefine our partnership working from the very informal side of just meeting together through to the formal legal arrangements that we've got in place. And that very much helps us streamline the process so that we can focus on more significant collaborations and gain assurance from them. I think it's important, though, that we avoid silos. You know, we've talked about embedding risk and risk being part of business as usual, and that's very much the same as collaboration. You know, at the end of the day, you're developing a service together, so don't see it as a separate process. It's business as usual. It's just you're doing it through a partnership. And I think the other thing that we've learned over the years is about keeping it streamlined and avoid the pitfall of risk being seen as a way of a reward. And by that I mean we learned that we had a number of not just collaboration services in general who thought, if we put this down as a risk, we're going to get a successful business case and we'll get more money. So I think it's important, a top tip, to not associate risk with a ticket to money as well. But see it as whether it's a normal service in-house or a collaboration, it has to be seen as seeking assurance as part of the overall corporate arrangement, not as a silo of collaboration on the side. But actually, when I was coming to sort of prepare to answer this question, one thing that dawned on us as an organisation is, are we doing enough to be aware of different partners' perspectives on risk? And we thought, actually, no, we're probably not. We're very focused on our own risk. But that's an action that we're going to take away from this webinar, is to actually look broader. What's on the risk registers of our neighbours and our partners? Not just from deciding whether we go into a partnership with them, but also from the perspective of, well, what have they thought about? And is there something there that we've not considered that could be relevant to us? Or also, is there something on their risk register that could have an impact on our own service? I was talking offline to Andy about the relationship between health and social care and the impact of joint working there, initiatives within health or the demographic trends within health within Wales, and how that can impact on the local authority, and are we doing enough to work together?